I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, we are back for episode 142 of Digital Divination.
Excellent. And I'm, okay, let me see if I can get this right for the last time. I am Ron Lundeen. I'm an employee of Wizards of the Coast, and the opinions I express here are mine and not theirs.
Perfect.
So does this mean, does this mean from now on the opinions you express will be the opinions of Wizards of the Coast? Is that what it means by the last time?
No, it means that within a few days after this releasing, I am no longer an employee of Wizards of the Coast. I am leaving the company and returning to Paizo.
What? No, we all knew that.
and what's your new position going to be at Paizo?
I'm managing. I'm going from a game designer at Wizards of the Coast to narrative manager at Paizo. So it is going to be a people manager. It's going to be a lot of mentoring. I'm really looking forward to it. Mm-hmm. Excited about the team I'm joining and excited about the people. It's awesome. I'm really excited.
Well, good. I'm excited for you, too.
Okay. I'm excited to have Ron back at the office in quotes.
Well, I wasn't going to come back until you came back, Jason, and you came back a while ago, so then I could.
Yeah, you had plenty of time. Took you long enough.
All right. Well, so you know, no more disclaimers. That's great. I like that.
Unless my Paizo training puts on a disclaimer, in which case you'll hear it from Jason Keeley as well.
I guess so.
Oh, well, this have to do a pre-recorded disclaimer on the beginning of the podcast or something.
Yeah. All righty, but on to other things.
Yes, yeah, so we are recording a couple weeks after Gen Con, and I think we'll talk about what we did at Gen Con and kind of how that turned out. How's that sound?
Mm-hmm. Sounds great.
Good, yeah.
All right.
Hope Jason, everyone enjoyed our Gen Con special, or the last episode when we talked to Jenny. I did the Paizo booth. I was working there on and off doing press. You might see some other things on some other videos where I talked about Battlecry and whatnot. And then I did one. I did a couple of panels officially. And then, John, we did yours kind of unofficially, mm-hmm. which is great. I loved it. Made some new friends, I think, with that. Mainly I just kind of floated around and picked up some swag, right? As you do at Gen Con. And I'm excited to talk about that. Should I start with that?
No, we'll talk about what we did and then we'll go to swag after that. How's that?
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay. I'll go fast.
Okay.
I went most of the con. I was able to hang out with my good friend, Mike, with whom I went to high school. We've been friends and Gen Con attendees for forever. And he's just getting back into the con scene. But this was, as I think I mentioned, the first con of my first Gen Con in a long time where I was attending on my own and not as a industry person. So a friend of mine was like, hey, we're all in like a classic, like nerd convention way. It's like, hey, buddy, back up in my hotel room, we're running a game of Axis and Allies. I'm like, you got me. I'm there. And so we played like a so it was like, you know, I was able to hang out with a lot of old friends and that was wonderful and play a lot of cool stuff, buy a lot of cool stuff. That's me. John, you go.
All right. So I ran a lot of organized play. So I ran 10 sessions of Starfinder Society 101, Invasion's Edge. I got to run my special in there, which is really cool because I finished up a little earlier than a bunch of tables. So I got to watch other tables finish up. And there's a big emotional twist at the end. So I got to see that. And actually, a lot of people approached me after that at the convention saying, why did this happen? I was so sad. Things like that. Oh, no. Well, plot reasons. It's okay. I couldn't say anything. And as Jason kind of alluded to already, I ran a seminar, which was lessons learned, how to get started in the tabletop RPG industry. And it basically, I had transcriptions from all my podcasts from presenting, and I had kind of collected some data in terms of what people had for their journey to get into the industry as freelancers and as full-time professionals, and then advice that those two groups gave, and kind of show our audience, which was, it was sold out, but then only about half as many people showed up. So about 30-ish people showed up because it was way in the middle of nowhere, away from everything else.
Yeah.
But they did show up and were very interested. And afterwards, you know, we had our Q&A, and then I had asked both Jason and Ron to show up and to kind of give their stories, which they did. And everybody's really excited to talk to them mostly, but some me a little bit. And so that was a lot of fun. So that's
yeah. I tell you, when you tell a group of nerds that you are, you know, you have some theater background, you unlock a whole different set of dialogue options. That I hope people come up to me and talk about theater. I'm like, yeah, theater is great. We used to do it, not so much anymore, but still, you know. And so I have some. I think I've got some new friends.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that I had said to everybody, the advice and how people got jobs, like the number one thing was like networking. And besides organized play and that seminar, I did a lot of networking and actually made a lot of neat connections. And now I have probably as much freelance work as I can handle. And I'm still looking for more. Great. So it's probably more than I can handle. But I have like several really big projects that I can, you know, there's no strict timeline on them, but it's like, hey, you want more? We'll give you more. So that was kind of exciting.
Well, and I really appreciate kind of the intellectual honesty, right? Where you're like, I just told a room full of people that they ought to do a thing. Yeah. I'm going to go do the thing, right?
Yeah. That's exactly what I was thinking. So
I don't know if I say this was networking per se, but I had some lunch with some other, with you two, of course, but a couple other people that are in the industry, are good friends, Mark Seifter and Linda Zayas Palmer. We had lunch. We talked about that. That was sort of semi-networking because I've done freelance for Seifter, at Battle Zoo, the Battle Zoo stuff for a couple years now, and that's fun. And then I had, lunch with a freelancer who I'd never met before, who I'd given work to, Michael Bramnick. It's good to sort of meet him officially, finally, and we had a big long talk about life and stuff,
Good. Great. Good.
Good. All right. Jason and I, on the last day, found a really neat park to have lunch at, too. Which I think we should remember. It is at the arena for the Indiana Pacers. They have their facility. There's a big park outside of it, outdoors, and it was really nice.
Yeah, there's a couple places to sit out there, and there's like other kind of deeper in places to sit. It looked like I remember though I walked past it one day. It was like there was an event there, an official event. So it might not be open all the time, but so it's good to sort of go by because it's also very close to the Calzone place, and the Calzone place was very good.
Yep. So let's go to swag that people picked up.
Yeah.
And Jason, I know you're really excited, so we'll let you start.
I'm excited about all the stuff. Some of it, I had an intent to go in and kind of look for one book and maybe pick that up if I saw it. I got more than that,
obviously. Because it always works exactly that way. I'm just going to go for one thing.
It was my plan to get at least one thing. Obviously, I was open to buying other things because I did. The first thing I actually got was a little like a super impulse buy. A little tiny book called Sock Puppets. I got this at the IPR booth. Just because I saw it, I was like, "Oh, this is geared directly towards me." So speaking of theater and whatnot, this is basically like a game where you play. You start to make a puppet and then talk. Do a puppet show. So you do a sort of a children's television show, a live children's television show, in which you are also the puppeteers arguing with each other through the puppets about like stuff that's happening in your life, like relationships and we live together and you haven't been cleaning the dishes, kind of like basically, make up some strife between people and do that. So that was pretty You know, I'm gonna have to try this out at some point. There's not a whole lot of like mechanics involved, I would say. Okay. It's just basically like a big, huge improv exercise.
So it's one of those double layer role playing games where one of your characters is the puppeteer and the other character is the puppet.
And so it's supposed to be like you're supposed to just do the puppet. Something I would love to sort of try to do. With the right group of people, right? Someone who's basically find some more theater nerds and some improv nerds who would are so willing to sort of do puppetry at the same time. That was like one day, and then I walked, again. I realized I didn't know where to find the book I was looking for. I didn't think about like what it was. I kept looking up. Do you have a booth? This publishing company, this designer doesn't have a booth per se. And I was like, I don't know how I'm going to find out where it is. It wasn't an IPR. I still, it's kind of an indie game. I'm not really going to know where to go. And then I realized I should look at their social media. Let's see if they have social media. So on Blue Sky, this company has a Blue Sky, and they're like, today we're going to be, the author's going to be signing books. Go to this booth. I'm like, oh, shoot. And then I dropped everything right before I went to lunch. I had some designated expo time, but this is like a day before that, and went and got this book, which is called Mythic Bastion Land. And got it signed by the author.
Ooh. Hey,
good job. His author is Chris McDowell. And this is like a fun, it looks like a very interesting kind of like fantasy knights, more mythological, more like Arthurian almost. You make a couple of them and you sort of get random myths and you kind of do some exploration, but you don't really know where anything is. The GM only knows, and you're just sort of moving around. The rules are like 6 pages long, and then the rest of this book is just the knights and the myths. You really don't exactly make a character. You just kind of get one randomly, and you can be the glass knight or the coin knight or the meteor knight, and it's just out of all these sort of different weird things. It looks mythical, more than anything. Put that over there. When I did go on my expo, I'm going to go through all of my stuff. Don't worry. When I did on my expo day, I was running around. There's a couple of things. Oh, maybe I'll get a couple more things. I was just curious about getting some stuff. I had a decision to make, and I was talking to Joe Piscini. He's walking around. I was like, I was looking at Pirate Borg. Because I like the way the layout is, and I kind of want to like level up my own sort of ability to think about layout in that way. Mm-hmm. But I had also the other through this YouTube channel called Quinn's Quest is how I learned about Mythic Bastion Land. He had also done a video review of a game called Slug Blaster, which seemed very interesting to me. And I was like, oh, but they have a deluxe thing, which Ron, you'll see. I know they have a deluxe box. I should probably get one or the other. And I was like, what should I get? I had just gotten a big sort of like freelance check, and I could get both. I was thinking about getting both. I went and checked the booth where it has Slug Blaster, and I looked at the big, huge box, and it had a lot of physical stuff in it. It was kind of cool, but it was like a GM screen and dice and stickers. And I'm like, I play pretty much virtually. So the compromise was I got both of them.
There you go.
but just the regular version of Slug Blaster, not the super deluxe box version. And I got Pirate Borg. Again, looks pretty, beautiful in there. I don't know anything about Mork Borg. I just kind of knew it. Knew it was a thing.
Wait. Have you played any of the Mork Borg variants or anything?
I have not. I had no idea what the system was, to be perfectly honest. I just kind of bought this one on vibes.
Well, there you go.
and I've already read through it, and I'm loving the vibes. Slug Blaster, again, this is really vaguely based on Blades in the Dark. So it's already up my alley, and it's about teenage kids doing hoverboard tricks in alternate dimensions, kind of weirdness. And teen drama and stuff like that. Definitely a thing for my Wednesday night group, but we're going to enjoy the heck out of that. When I got home, of course, is when I got the Paizo stuff, right?
There you go.
Battle Cry and the Starfront. This was waiting for me at home. So this counts as Gen Con swag because it was already there.
I'll allow it.
It's great. I'm so proud of this book. People are enjoying the I'm seeing videos that are like saying really good things about the Guardian class. I'm so excited about that. I'm so happy that people are liking how it works, and I'm happy that people will eventually, get to meet and maybe play my Grimmier, my big blue boy. Mm. And this is less Gen Con swag, but it did come between Gen Con and now. And I'm just going to mention this because it is sort of the Welcome to Night Vale box, which isn't out for everybody. But if you kickstarted it, you might be getting it very, very soon. And Renegade was kind enough to sort of give me a free like deluxe backer thing. It's got a I got this box, which is a chock full of stuff and like prints and extra dice and a GM screen and a dice bag and a little dice roller tray. It's all Night Vale themed.
Wow.
And yeah, it's very exciting. My name is technically in this. I did do a little bit of work on it, but the bulk of it is a bunch of other people like Carlos Cabrera and others who I kind of hooked up Renegade with right before I left. Night Vale is... I have some ties to the property a little bit, but not unfortunately, I didn't get a real chance to really kind of dig into to how it works. But great. That's the end. That's all the stuff I got. Still counts. Maybe I got a couple pins. Actually, I think maybe, yeah, someone gave me a pin, but that's
okay. Well, I got pins too. I didn't bring those out.
Yeah.
All right, Ron.
But all I care about are books.
Books.
There you go. All right, if I'm going through my stuff, I will need to grab off my shelf behind me.
Uh-oh.
I've got a host. This is my most expensive find. I've got a really good, nearly complete collection of second edition Planescape stuff, which it was a setting that I always really liked. And it's the only thing I've really started to be collectory about with role-playing games. And one of the things that I was missing, I found at one of the, is the Faction War adventure that I found at at one of the places that was selling. It's actually, a comic store that I used to go to all the time when I lived in Chicago, just outside of Chicago. They had like a bunch of their stuff down to vend. And I'm like, oh, this is one of the Planescape second edition things I still need. And that's great. So I picked that up. I was excited. Speaking back in the old days, I used to run and play a lot of a game called Paranoia. One of the adventures that I got that I loved, but we ever actually got a chance to run, they did a re-release of in the new edition of Paranoia, the Yellow Clarinet's Black Box Blues, you all over looking for a, basically a bunch of music videos. It's a spoiler. That's fun. Because my friend Jason Keeley had talked it up a lot, I got a copy of the Triangle Agency. And my wife and I just finished up season 1 and 2 of Severance. We kind of binged both of them. And it's got strong Severance vibes in an RPG.
Yeah.
But the presentation of the RPG itself with the anomaly intruding while you're reading the thing is so, so good.
It's one of those books that's like a good read almost. Like it's a rule book and it's got a lot of rules in it, but like it's entertaining enough to read by itself.
Yeah.
That I really loved it. And I ran a short campaign of it already. So.
And then the last thing that I have like right at hand, a couple of conventions ago, I got in a demo of a great Monty Cook game called Stealing Stories for the Devil, which is a big heist game, futuristic heist alternate reality kind of game that is just wonderful. And I've run it. I played it there. I immediately bought it and then ran it 3 or 4 times and loaned it to somebody. And I don't know who, and I've never gotten it back. So I finally resolved to buy another version of Stealing Stories for the Devil, which I did at Gen Con. But while I was there, they have a similar game that a friend of mine really talked up called The Devil's Dandy Dogs by Shanna Germain. It's the same sort of, you're creating the story as you go, game, but in this one you are all hellhounds. You're all creatures of the devil's shadow who is you're telling a story about how you went to collect a soul that was promised to the devil, and the devil doesn't value souls nearly as much as good stories. And so each of your characters that you make has, you only have 3 attributes. Your supernatural ability is devil, your ability to talk to people is your dandy, and your ability to like fight or dig or run and stuff is your dog ability. So you are either more devil or dandy or dog when you play Devil's Dandy Dogs.
Nice.
I'm really looking forward to giving this a try as well.
All right. Well, for me, I kind of have 2 buckets of things. The first one is, as I mentioned
big
before,
buckets of stuff. That's a lot of Gen Con stuff.
Well, so at Gen Con, I bought a bunch of stuff, and then on the way home, I stopped in Ohio to visit with a friend, and I drove from his place to Cincinnati, and I stopped by a game store called Yoda Quest in Cincinnati. In apparently in Ohio, I didn't realize this at the time. They had a tax holiday, so there's no tax on anything, and so it's like I can actually buy stuff cheaper in Ohio now than I could order it online. So I bought a bunch of other things as well, and actually didn't put all those. But when I flew out, I actually had to buy another. I had to buy another suitcase. So I went to the Goodwill and got a $5 suitcase that just lasted me to get home. But I brought in like another 40 pounds, additional 40 pounds of books home from what I, what I went to.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was a lot. Wow. But so I did do organized play. And one of the things, they did two things for me. One is they gave me a Player Core book there. And what I'm doing with this is I got a bunch of signatures from people who worked on it. So I got Jessica and Jenny and Thirsty.
Oh, that's neat.
I got Mona and then I got this guy, Keely, who wrote I'll Sign Anything on here as well. And this is going to be auctioned off.
I'll Sign Anything.
Yes. This is going to be auctioned off at our Emerald Con in December. Fundraiser for the Food Lifeline in Seattle. So I got that as a prize for GMing. They give you tickets and randomly you can get a prize. I got Battle Cry, which I also got signed by the designer. And that'll go into the auction. And then they gave me all these coupons at the store. And it's like, I get most everything. So I had to find something I didn't get. So I got the Infinity Deck and got it signed by both of the designers to auction off as well.
Oh, I have not.
I can't wait to get my copy of that.
I have my copy, and the only reason I didn't show it here is because I'm just grabbing the stuff that's up in my office. And that's actually one of the games that's down by our dining room table because I was just showing it off the other night, and I forgot to go grab it before this call. Also signed by Jason, I'll Sign Anything, Keely.
Awesome. Yeah, anything. And
I got Joe Pacini, and you can't even hardly tell what his signature is. Also, when I was going down, part of my networking, somebody had told me that Dungeon Crawl Classics, they have this soft cover they were selling for $10 of their core book, which is normally like 40 or 50 or something. So
it's
I went
a good
down
deal.
There
That's a good book.
And picked it up. And when I was there, I met their 5E designer, and I said, and part of my networking is I introduced myself. I gave a card. I brought 250 cards. I got rid of 220 of them. They get rid of all of them. That was my goal, get rid of them. So he gave me a 5e adventure conversion. He's looking for people to do conversions for him from their Dungeon Crawl Classic work over to their 5e stuff. And in particular, he also wants people to do certain things. And those are the things I told him I did. He goes, oh, that's great. So contact me. While I was there, I picked up their Purple Planet Adventures, which is their kind of their space stuff. I picked up their Mutant Crawl Classics, which is their Gamma World stuff. I picked up their X-Crawl Classics, which is their kind of a game in a dungeon where people go and compete. I also picked up something else from a couple other adventure books because he said he was going to also connect me with their Dungeon Crawl Classics guy for doing some writing for them as well. So that's on my list for next time to do. I met somebody from AAW Games and was talking to him. I got one of his books as well. And then the last thing I ran into, there's this company called GUI Cube that does these 5e adventures in a box where they have all the cards and NPC pictures and all kinds of stuff. And I thought I would check it out. And they also need folks to do some writing for them as well. So anybody I talked to that immediately seemed like they were interested in getting some work done, I decided to buy a sample of what they had so that I knew what they were doing.
Yeah, you have. Yeah.
Very sensible.
Yeah. Smart. I mean, you should know what you're going to try to write for.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, you might know 5e, but you might not know how this company
how
wants
they present
right, and their specific offerings and how they present stuff.
It. Yeah. Well, yeah. Exactly. Well, what they would do with what they're doing with 5e, they might have like I don't know all cookie based adventures, and if you don't know that, then you give them a non cookie based adventure.
Right.
More shame to you.
And then the last thing I got, and I have a card for it only. I don't know if you can actually see this, but I bought something called Campaign Cartographer 3. And it's basically a map building software package. And they had a con special where you could get both full campaigns. So you do like the overall world maps, city maps. So you could build cities, dungeons, and then you could also do like interior starships. So I bought, got their package that had kind of all these things in it. I had them demo it for me. It's like really, really cool how it works. I haven't used it much, but for my own adventures and stuff, I wanted to get some software that I was allowed to then put in my campaigns and sell it. So it comes with a license for resale of the things that you create. So it's a German company and they have a distributor in the US. So a lot of stuff and it's still all sitting around my office because I'm running out of shelf space. And the other thing I want to point out, you could probably just see this thing down here and then this thing down here. You probably can't tell what those brown things are. Those are maps. One is from White Plume Mountain. The other one's from the Tomb of Horrors. I got those as a birthday present from Mr. Ron Lundeen and his wife today.
Today.
Today. Very good.
So it's kind of the framed grid map of the adventure kind of put in there. So we're actually running through White Plume Mountain now.
Don't look too close at that map because we're not done with White Plume Mountain and we haven't done Tomb of Horrors yet, but oh, we will.
So that was pretty exciting. So that was kind of my my haul.
If I may add a little something, this isn't something I got, but it was interesting that I want to bring up. Joe Pacini brought home this board game called Vantage. It's Stonemaier, and it is a very interesting kind of cooperative storytelling kind of not really a storytelling kind of game, but talk about narrative kind of game in which you crash land on a planet. And then you might have a different goal depending on what planet you're crashing on or just randomly. And then where you go is kind of randomized and you're sort of separate from each other. So you're basically like taking it's a little bit like Tales of Arabian Nights where you're kind of like, I'm going to do this. Okay, someone's going to look up the book, at the challenge book and read, you're going to do this, roll these many dice. And if you succeed, this happens, basically, right? And so it was very interesting. We played it once. And, we crashed out on this planet and the goal was to sort of like make diplomatic, connections here with the sentients. And I met a wounded sentient, healed him. He taught me a card game, which was like in the game itself that I had to learn. Yeah. And then I got a destiny, which is another goal to be like the beat a bunch of people at this card game. So I was roaming around trying to find people to duel at this card game, essentially playing like Gwent instead of doing the Witcher 3, main quest, right? I was doing that. And meanwhile, he was wandering around. He was like failing to climb, do like survival stuff and getting hurt. But then he found a magic wand and started learning spells. So like, it is a weird and wild game. It's very interesting, and again, there's there's strategy because I had a character sheet and I had stuff on it. I was like, oh, I'm gonna be better if I do these types of actions. So it was a lot of like talk to people. At the end, I followed this sentient around. I found a pyramid of gold, and in it, I did the test of some sort of merchant's test or something like that, which had me solve a puzzle in the game. It was like, here's some cards. And it was an image based puzzle. I was like, solve this puzzle. And it was a very like pretty much like a puzzle you might find in a Professor Layton kind of game. Mm. I solved it and essentially got this sort of badge, and that badge counted as the diplomatic relationship with so I won that. I got that. You can keep playing after you do like finish a quest to get like an epic victory or whatever. We kind of had stopped. It had been a couple hours at that point. So, very interesting game.
That sounds neat.
Very story based. Yeah.
And I think another thing that's happened, and we'll just kind of segue a little bit, and I feel bad, Ron, because this will be the first time that you don't really have a lot of input into this. But on Tuesday, so this past Tuesday, we recorded session zero for our next, our season five of Intrepid Heroes, which will be, have been published 3 days before this thing comes out. This comes out on Thursday. This comes out on Monday. I already edited and posted it up. And Jason, you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, we're doing Murder in Metal City. We're going to basically try to play through that module. We've got six players. They all have decided to make the wildest, wackiest Starfinder characters to fit in this sort of noir-esque kind of noir robots, basically, kind of setting that we're kind of, you know, comes with the game. It's Abalon, but I'm gonna noir it up a bunch, but yeah, as much as possible, since it's a murder mystery.
Nice. I got some noirish background music. I don't know.
I was gonna ask about that, but after we started recording here, because I wanted to talk about the introduction to introductions, basically. For the first episode, but for the first episode proper, we just did session zero, which was
session zero. I put a little bit in there. I found a place that has a bunch of real traditional kind of slow jazz noir kind of music and stuff like that. So yeah. The particular one I put in there, you can just barely hear is we're mm-hmm. kicking off. It's not super jazzy. We'll see. We'll see how we want to go. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And Ron, I'm really sad that we don't have.
Well, no, I get to be involved, and that I get to be involved as a listener. And if I can't
give us your feedback,
I can't yet hear it today. We're recording, but I will be able to later this week. Is that it? Comes out on Monday or Tuesday?
Comes out tomorrow. So tomorrow at 6 a.m. it'll be up.
Okay, so tomorrow, our tomorrow is Monday, but for the listeners, it's already up. Okay, all right.
Yeah,
I'm sure they all have already listened to it.
Yes, of course.
And if you haven't, go listen to it.
Yeah, I guess so.
And what I want to say is this first episode zero, because we had some
technical
related issues due to the heat, actually down in Portland.
Yeah.
We couldn't do video. We're looking to do video for the remaining episodes after this. So there will be also a video link for this in addition to the podcast on the No Direction Network. So,
well, that'll be cool.
That's pretty good.
This is the first Intrepid Heroes with video once that happens, right?
That is the plan. That's Ooh. One reason why I was kind of shaking up the crew a little bit. Because we had two people that was not going to work out in our existing crew because of
tech issues or be perpetual. Yeah.
So,
which means I should probably, again, before we record that, maybe get something back here to block all this white space.
And get yourself a fedora, you know?
John.
Oh.
I'm insulted that you don't know that I already have several fedoras.
I have one.
The way you looked up and to the right is like you were looking up at a wall of fedoras.
No. What I'm looking at right now is a weird straw hat and a cowboy hat, actually. I thought it was one of my fedoras. Although, to be perfectly honest, I haven't, I've moved twice in, the past couple of years, and all of my hats are kind of packed.
Time for hat inventory.
I got to go do hat inventory, probably. Yes. Yeah. And a lot of them are very dusty. So I have to dust it down.
Yeah, I have one I picked up in Croatia. Go ahead.
Oh, nice. Now, do you have a fedora or a trilby? Because there might be photos of me circulating it online from Gen Con from maybe 10 years ago, where I'm wearing, I think, more of a trilby. And I look...
I don't know the difference.
Like one of those guys. And it saddens me that I look like one of those guys. And I did have a big hat phase a lot earlier, and you know, the m'lady kind of
I know what you're
hat
meaning.
Guys I've gone past that, even though I think hats are still
it's not. I don't know if it is a trilby. I think it's a trilby.
Are you looking at a picture of Jason from 10 years ago just like
that? I'm looking at difference between a fedora versus a trilby.
I don't know. I was about to say I don't think we're the podcast to get into those sort of differences, but in fact, we kind of are. in that we there's no we'll go into all sorts of minutia for anything. So
for no reason, for no real reason.
Well, yeah, I don't know. Oh, one last thing before we go. Chicken update, Ron.
Yeah, let's hear a chicken update. I want to talk a little bit something about also that that I was sort of announced at Gen Con. I think that it was a surprise to me. Let me talk about this real quick.
Okay.
Starfinder Afterlight, I had no idea was a thing. And I happened to like notice the video playing in the Sagamore Ballroom when I was working the SAG store the first morning, Thursday morning. And I was like, what's this looks like to be? And I was like, Starfinder Afterlight. What? I had to look it up and it's some sort of, you know, CRPG video game. We don't know anything much about it at all. It's going to be kickstarted at some point in the future, but it just kind of like blew me away that's coming. It's going to be like 2E rules. It's going to be probably the first, as far as I know, the first video game that will be using the sort of 2E rule set.
Oh, that'll be cool.
Yes. Starfinder. Yeah, I'm actually looking at the page for it now. There's actually like a short kind of an animated clip that they were showing.
Yeah, an animated sort of trailer, teaser, one would say. And I mean, it's got everything.
Yeah, it's going to be released on Steam. Nothing announced yet. All right.
That was super early, but it was like, it caught me so by surprise.
Yeah, I think
a delighted surprise, it sounds like.
Yes. Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. I can't wait.
Well, that'll be neat. All right.
And Chicken Report.
Now a chicken.
Okay, I don't have the chicken news that I want to give. In that we have a whole new flock, and I rebuilt part of their coop and everything. There's 8 of them. They're doing great and they're wonderful, but they're young, they're new, and at some point they'll start laying. And I was, man, I'm going to be excited once they do, right? Because that's like when all the effort of raising the chickens turns into food for me and my family. That's what it's for. But that has not started yet.
Isn't that? Don't you want to say that's when the chickens come home to roost? That's basically the meaning of that phrase, right?
I don't.
In a lot of ways.
I don't know. I don't. I'm just counting them before they hatch. I've heard no rule against that. No. Right.
That's not a good idea.
But what we have is in the nesting boxes. I did just put in. We have wooden eggs, and the wooden eggs are there. So if they go into the nesting box, they're like feel them. Like, oh, this feels. Oh, this is what I'm supposed. This is where I'm supposed to produce these things that are shaped like this, and it helps train them. And so. I put the wooden eggs in and they're like pecking at them and nothing happens to them because they're made of wood. And they're like, oh, what's this? I'm going to be producing some of these. Anyway, so someday soon I will be able to give you the chicken news that I want, which is that our new flock is producing. Very fun, but not quite yet.
Excellent. Well, cool. And that is this week's chicken report.
This week's chicken report.
Back to you, John. That,
I'm John.
I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason, and this has been Digital Divination.